This week on Out of the Air features New York City-based singer-songwriter Robert Scheffler, whose third full-length studio album, Truce, was released June 26th. Next, ceramic artist and Duneland Pottery Studio owner David Auriella shares his own artistic journey. Our spotlight's on Michigan City Walking Tour, based on Sandra L. Young's Divine Vintage novel series on July 17th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. Hello, I'm Larry Breckner, board chair for Lakeshore Public Media and also a sustaining supporter. As Northwest Indiana's public broadcaster on TV, radio, and digital, we're not only bringing you the best of PBS and NPR, but more importantly, serve as a vital community resource for great local programs like Regionally Speaking, Eye in the Arts, Friends and Neighbors, Let's Eat with Chef Nick, Art in the Air, Building Blocks, and more. Please help protect my Lakeshore Public Media with your support by visiting lakeshorepublicmedia.org/give. We'd like to welcome actually back to Art in the Air Spotlight, Sandra L. Young. She's an author and has a series of books which we've talked about before, actually three of them, and we'll talk even about maybe the fourth, Divine Vintage, Divinely Dramatic, and then The Ghostly Diva, and all kind of centered around Michigan City, which actually brings us to what we're going to talk about today. She's actually going to do a Divine Vintage Story Walk, a health and enlightening adventure, all CERN, and that's going to be Thursday, July 17th, and she's has a collaborator. So anyway, she's going to tell us about Sandra. Welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Oh, thank you, Larry and Esther. It's always so great to talk with you.
I know. It's so nice seeing you, Sandy.
So tell us a little bit about how you have woven your three novels and kind of created this whole walking tour that's going to happen on July 17th.
Well, the Divine Vintage series is traditionally published, and they're all set, as you said, in Michigan City, LaPorte, and Divine Vintage specifically set in the Uptown Arts District. And so there are many locations that I use that are real in the book. And a longtime friend who in her retirement has created Blue Bonsai Walking Tours read the book. She really enjoyed it and said, would you like to create a walking tour? Well, of course, with my acting background and everything, I thought this is so fun. So we started talking to partner collaborators and locations like Barker Mansion, where the Haunted Mansion is loosely, you know, was inspired by Barker, and then Good News Vintage has a lot of vintage clothing. Trinity Episcopal is where a wedding takes place in a church. And then, you know, the library, Lubesnik Center, Old Lighthouse Museum, those are all touched on in the book. So we will do a guided tour starting at 10 a.m. on July 17th, starting at Barker Mansion, and walk people around. We're going to talk about the history of these locations, meet the partners, and how they tie into the book.
So have you picked out your outfit for it?
It depends on the weather. You know, it really does. But it will be vintage, most definitely. Whenever I talk to book clubs or do presentations, which I love meeting local readers, always wear vintage clothing for my huge collection.
Is there a cost for this tour?
We decide there is cost behind the tour. Rather than charge a set price for this one, we decide to do it just as a donation. And we are putting a Eventbrite doing a link that way. And if people go on my webpage at sandrayoungauthor.com, they can access that Eventbrite link. And we know I've spoken to so many local book clubs that are going to be excited about this. Again, it's a healthy, fun activity. Get out there with your friends. You know, learn more about the history of Michigan City and some of the locations. I mean, we just see it as a huge win-win for the arts and literacy. And we're very excited to put this together. And our partners have just been, you know, fabulous, too, with wanting to be part of this.
So I always hate to bring this up. Do you have a rain date in case something happens?
Well, what we have said, if it thunderstorms, we definitely won't walk. But if it's a light rain, we will be going. So people would be prepared for that. And I took a Gilded Age Mansions walking tour in New York, and it was raining. And we went, you know, we just trotted through the rain, and it was okay. It's not going to be the ultimate, but right now we are doing this. And also on September 11th, we have a second date. We're going to do another guided tour. And we are really super thrilled to be working with the AutoCast system. You may know that. They did the Sculpt Fusion walking tour of the different sculptures. Well, they are doing a walking tour online, accessible, of course, from anywhere in the world on this tour. So the script, we've written that. I've reported my pieces. And then that will be up soon, should be up by the time we air here, that people can jump on if they can't do the live tour and want to do it themselves. They can just listen and look at the script and move themselves through Michigan City. It's also a love letter to the Uptown Arts District of Michigan City, LaPorte County.
So, Sandy, how far are they walking? Because it's a kind of a robust walk if you do all of these sites. So I'm just wondering about people who have, like, maybe walking challenges. How much walking?
A couple of miles in there. And we would, we'll have a stop as we go along. Like if we go into the Episcopal Church, people can sit down there. Go to Lubesnik, we will definitely have a sit down time and a water break there. At the end, we're actually going to stop at Shoreline and lunch on your own if people want to join us, because Shoreline's in the book. That's where our two romantic leads have a lunch as their romance is blooming. So, you know, my book's wrapped dual timeline romances around historical mysteries and a ghostly sizzle. So all those elements are going to be worked into this.
I was going to ask about the lunch item, and I thought, you know, somewhere in there you probably want to have food after you do all that walking. Well, quickly, in our last minute and a half here, I want to give you a chance to talk about your upcoming book that you're working on, which is something completely different.
I am diving into truth-based historical fiction, and it is actually done. I just finished a polished. I'm sending it off to a beta reader, they call them, a book coach friend, to read it again. It's set at the West Baden Mineral Springs Hotel. In 1901, they burnt down and they built the tallest freestanding dome in the world. I'm basing it from the daughter of the tycoon Sinclair family, and it was a great story. I researched like crazy on this and found out some real juicy, true information that's just elevated the book. And my goal with this one is trying to get an agent and move to a bigger press, because it's a super cool story to, again, highlight Indiana and something that was really worthy. It goes through 1918 when they opened it as a World War I, a Great War hospital.
Well, really quickly, how can people find you online, where they can get your books, and remind us one more time about the information on the walking tour?
SandraYoungAuthor.com, more details about the tour and the Eventbrite link. I'm on Facebook under that, Instagram, and again, love to connect. Anybody in a local book club, I'll come out and meet with you and talk about the books, answer questions, or if anybody wants a book before or after the tour, I'm happy to bring them, sign your own copy. It's just so fun to meet everyone locally.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you back. The Divine Vintage Story Walk on July 17th, SandraYoungAuthor.com. Thank you so much for coming back on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow.
This is Raina Duras, host of World Cafe, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Robert Scheffler to Art on the Air. Robert is a singer, songwriter, composer, musician, and furniture maker based in New York City. His work has appeared on dozens of television and film soundtracks. His record release include the latest called Truce, along with past releases, Pretty Town, Needles, and Life of Luxury. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Robert. It's very nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you guys, too.
What we always like to do with our show is explore our guest background. I always like to say their origin story. So tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now. Tell us all about Robert.
I was raised on Long Island, which is suburban in New York area. And and then I started out in some bands on Long Island with some friends, mostly cover bar bands. And started writing original material more seriously, and then had some another band, and we started venturing into New York City because that's kind of where you have to go. You know, the suburban clubs want they're looking for covers, and the city wants no covers, that's where you go. So we made our way into the city, and then I started my own band. And so that's how I got into the city. But it took a long time, you know. I wasn't a fan of the city for a long time, and I was kind of scared of it until I had friends kind of move in after college, and kind of held my hand and ventured around. So that's how I got to New York. But I was always close by.
Well, actually, I would love to know more about when the writing. Were you writing as early as elementary school? What was the family like? Was there a lot of music in the household? I mean, were you the first person to venture into having music in a band?
There was always music in the house. My grandfather was a trombone player who I didn't get to hear him, but he was there. My dad was a big audiophile, so he would like make and build components, gigantic speaker cabinets and tube amps, and loved to blast things loud. But it wasn't my kind of, it was like big band. It was opera, but it was big. It was loud. So that was kind of cool. So I grew up in that kind of arena. And I do remember, so I taught myself guitar, but there was a guitar in the house. And I realized, thinking about it, why did we have a guitar in the house? But I think at that time, my mom was going through like adult improvement education kind of, so there was a cooking phase and there was the painting phase. And I think that's where the guitar came from. I think there was a guitar phase. Yeah, so there was a nylon string guitar around and I was in band in school. I played clarinet, like a lot of people. Don't remember how to play the clarinet, but I picked up the guitar and taught myself. And then, my sister was bringing home records, Dylan, Stones, Sly, Beatles. And then when I was playing more seriously, it was kind of, for me, it was Neil Young, Jackson Browne, easy chord kind of stuff you could pick up and try to emulate. But I was always writing from an early time. I just didn't play it for anybody really until we had bands who wanted material and slowly, felt more confident to play out.
So this Truce is your, what number album is this that came out on June 26th?
Yes, it's my third full length and fourth. I had an EP, it was my first thing, so... You have to put those in a different category, I guess, for some reason.
I guess.
Yeah.
And, we're close enough to actually hear one of the songs from it, Hang on Skyline. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration background of that, and then we'll take a listen to it.
Skyline started out as a demo kind of differently. We wound up in the studio when I was mixing it, peeling back a lot of the tracks. This was a friend of mine who... two friends of mine kind of had made this crazy, crazy decision to, they started a relationship a long distance and, fell in love and just did crazy things and moved. He was a Canadian guy, Terry, and he just, he left it all behind. He sold his house, packed it up, moved to New York City. And I had for a very long time this idea, a couple of lines from the song, Hang On Skyline, I'll Be There Soon. And then Terry's story was like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. You know, this is what this is about. So I was able to finish these phrases that had rolled, you know, been haunting me. And that's Hang On Skyline.
Well, let's take a listen to it. This is Robert Scheffler's album, Truce, Hang On Skyline.
Hang on skyline, hang on moon, wait for me, I'll be there soon. I found a reckless heart, sweet lips to kiss, they're in a minute now, I wanna miss. Pay no attention, pay no mind to what I had to do to leave it all behind. Hang on skyline, hang on moon, I'll be there soon. The city has spoken, the lights have grabbed a hold, I'm giving back everything I've been sold. Heart that's gonna see me through. I know it's risky business, but I'm telling you, if I get spit out in the end, I'll be back to do it all again.
Skyline from the Truce album that debuted June 26th. Robert Scheffler is our guest today.
So Robert, when you have like the theme of what you want to do, is the writing quite easy? Did this one flow for you? And it was interesting. I'm so glad you told the before that, because I sort of viewed the album as being all personal to you songs, not necessarily in your periphery. So that's...
No, it's not easy. And yeah, for this record, I wanted to sit down and sort of be a little more confident and use lines and scenes and references that I knew about personally, or you know people close to me. And my process generally is to sit down, and I can usually come up with musical ideas pretty quickly, you know, whether they stick around or not, but it's the lyrics that, you know, if I'm lucky, I have maybe a phrase that's been haunting me. But, you know, I've kind of learned, and I looked at some tips from writers, like poets and novelists who kind of say, just, you know, just sit with it, you know, like, you know, more than you know, if you just think about focusing on, you know, a painting or something long enough, something will hit. You know, you kind of don't have to, you know, sort of run around and haunt the back alleys of the city to get inspired. So I kind of did that. I kind of just sat, you know, right here and things eventually came. But the lyrics, it always take me a long time. I've never been that one of those writers, you know, who were lucky enough to just kind of finish something in 20 minutes or, you know.
Where do you record at? Do you actually go into a studio, or do you have a small studio? Or, you know, I mean, in this day and age, it's a whole different type of thing. You don't need to go to a big studio, but where do you record your albums?
Yeah, it is a new thing. So for this record in particular, it was a new process for me. I didn't, my band had been gone for a long time, and so when I sat down to do this record, I started out with demos, but then I did sort of upgrade my situation at home and was able to do all the tracks basically at home. Inspired by Warren Zevon, I know, who had an approach on one of his records to do a lot of things on his own and then bring them into a studio. So that's what I did. I brought these tracks from my home studio into a big time studio. And my friend Scott Anthony runs a studio in New Jersey. And so he mixed them, some of the tracks got revised and I would go home and re-record things and bring them back to the studio. So that went on for a few months. But ultimately we did wind up in a nice studio for the mixing and the mastering.
Right. And you do your vocals in the big studio then, or do you do them?
No, I did those at home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I trusted Scott that he was like, you know, I was like, Scott, do I have anything here? And he was like, yeah, I can work with this. You know, they were good enough. It's a new process for me to, you know, to take it that far, you know, to be kind of self-producing.
So with your movie soundtracks, on any of them, have you done singing, or is it mostly just the composing of the music?
For a while I was with a service that would place your songs that I had already recorded, you know, with different shows. And really one feature film kind of took one of my songs and featured it over a montage. I joked that the film wasn't a great film, but I was happy and lucky that they used my stuff. And I just have a lot of stuff that I've recorded that are just instrumental, and you know, hopefully someday someone will use them. But I've been lucky to have some things placed on TV shows, and I have a filmmaker friend, and we did a couple of, she was commissioned for a couple of short films, and I did the music for those. And that's just pure joy for me, because I don't have to labor over the lyrics, and, you know, it's just a lot of fun.
Well, we have another chance to listen to something else from your Truce album, Blue Sky Mess. Tell us a little bit about that, and we'll take a listen to that one, Robert.
Blue Sky Mess was, I have a friend, we have a love tension. And I thought, this is something I could play with. It's just about that, you know, those people who push you. And, if you're lucky to, you know, just to not get over, you know, my internal grouchiness, I will appreciate, the push. And, so I was hoping to sort of capture that sort of idea in a relationship.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to it. This is from the Truce album, released June 26th, Robert Scheffler, Blue Sky Mess.
No easy way to get there, no good reason to go. A bad idea to start with, how could I say no? Against my better judgment, it's just the way we seem to work out. I drive along the river to some old ruin off the map. Go looking for it. Without all of your restlessness. old defenses down. Working on the landing. Well, I hope you'll stick around. Watching my careless evolution with the patience of a sneak attack.
Blue Sky Mess on the Truce album with Robert Scheffler here on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
I sort of have a personal question, so don't feel free not to answer. But what is the emotional toll on you, like, after such a personal album? Is there a catharsis? Do you feel like you said what you need to say? Because, it, you know, like, especially that last one, it was just like, whew, okay.
Yeah. I think I feel, you know, but when I'm happy with a song, I don't know that I'm looking to exercise any demons or anything. But and at some point, it just, the idea of the song will take over, you know, like the inspiration will be what it is. And then, well, you know, the song will be what it is. So I feel accomplished, you know, if I'm happy with what I've done. But I'm always, you know, kind of looking to the next, you know, what's the next thing going to be? You know?
Yeah, what is the next thing going to be?
What is the next thing going to be? So I'm, I love writing songs. So I'm going to, I'm working on kind of the next record. And I think, because there's always a plus and a minus with doing so much of this stuff at home myself, I have the luxury of fixing and redoing and, you know, without wasting and patience and time and money of musicians. And, the downside is you miss the collaboration with other people in a room, coming up with something you didn't think of and something's magical. So, That's my plan, but I have to kind of find.
Does that happen when you take it on the road, sort of like when you go, so you get sort of that from?
You know, lately, so when I had a band, that was always great. We did our demos in the studio, and we'd go on the road, and things would morph and change, and it was great, and I loved it. But now I'm kind of doing solo shows, so the challenge there, or the interesting thing there, is to translate a big band song into, you know, an acoustic guitar situation, which is also fun, has its charms. But I kind of want to maybe get the band back to, you know, get a band back together.
Robert, in our last couple moments here, your website and how people can get your album.
Yes, robertscheflermusic.com. We'll have all the info, and, you know, if you want to reach out to me or just where you can find all my stuff. It's got all the links for streams and downloads and listening. And, you know, I have an Instagram page, which you can link to, it can be linked to there. I got to post more, you know, it's like content beast, but I'm trying to learn how to do that. But yeah, it's really the website, robertscheflermusic.com. And, I hope you like this new record.
Well, I appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Robert Scheffler, his new album, June 26th was released, Truce. And we appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your arts and music journey.
Thank you. Thank you. A pleasure. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you so much.
In the morning, hints of sunrise and a clamor in the trees calls the passing of the evening. I don't know if time to get up, stretch my shoulders, feel the floor beneath my feet, stand up tall when I'm ready, face the hours I've yet to meet.
Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Hannah Hammond-Hagman of Chesterton Arts Center, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome David L. Ariola to Art on the Air. David is a ceramic artist and small business owner. In January of 2023, he opened Duneland Pottery in downtown Chesterton, Indiana. Duneland Pottery is a pottery studio for independent potters offering workshops and classes. They also offer finished pottery and a just glaze or paint a pot activities. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, David. It's very nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, David, the first thing we always want to know about our guests is their origin story. I always like to tee it up by saying how they got from where they are to where they are now. So tell us all about David.
So I grew up in Illinois. I was in the South Suburbs, and I think we were transplanted to Northwest Indiana probably like right around the beginning of my senior year of high school. Been a Hoosier ever since. When I was in grade school, I think that's kind of when I started really gravitating more towards art, just because I was constantly drawing. A lot of the things that I used to draw were mostly figurative, which has probably very little relevance to the pottery that I create today. But that was kind of like just the tipping point into just being expressive and creatively. I started doing like a lot of projects and posters and stuff like that for like the basketball teams and stuff like that. So like I was constantly creating things that were, you know, done with pencils, crayons and colored pencils and stuff like that. But it wasn't until probably my junior year of high school. I went to TF North High School in Calumet City, Illinois. My junior year, my guidance counselor finally buckled and let me get into an art class. She kept telling me that I needed a professional career path and all that stuff. And I was like, I really want to be in art. I really want to do art, you know? And it was halfway through our first semester that I learned how to, you know, pick up a paintbrush. And I think it was pretty much, yeah, halfway through that semester, my teacher, she goes, "You are going into the studio class for seniors," because she's like, "You're doing great and you're excelling." And she's like, "Your creativity is very surrealistic." She said that she started comparing me to Salvador Dali, which I didn't know much about art history at the time. So I was just like, "Oh, cool." But I really did. I like to do like just weird pieces, you know, like putting large insects in the middle of my paintings, or, you know, I had a fascination with cars. So I was doing like, you know, cars that were flying at the time, like just really like off the wall stuff, you know? And, I got put into my studio, art program, at the high school for my junior and senior year. And then after I graduated, I literally was under the impression that like I had to go completely professional. So, when I went to Purdue Calumet, I went and got my associate's in business, and then I worked a very lengthy professional career, doing sales, marketing and management. And then it was about 15 years ago, I decided to step away from all the corporate, lifestyle and dive right back into school. And I attended, Indiana University Northwest and got my BFA, in painting. And then it was during my time at IUN, that's when I discovered pottery. So I've only been doing pottery for about like maybe 12 to 13 years. But I was in the middle of my BFA program. And can I tell you guys the story of how I got into pottery?
Oh, yes.
Yes, please.
So to me, I find it funny. And I literally just had this conversation with my old ceramics professor about 2 weeks ago about it. So He found it funny too. So I fought against taking a ceramics class. I was like, I want to take sculpture. I want to take printmaking. I wanted to pretty much just take anything that they would place me in the arts program. And I couldn't get into screen printing or printmaking because they only accepted so many students, you know, and all the students that were in that program were specifically doing their BFA in that. So I couldn't get in. There's a waiting list. So my advisor, she goes, hey, I'm going to put you in ceramics. I'm like, nah, put me in sculpture. She puts me in sculpture. I'm working with clay. And I'm like, it's okay. But I was interested in like making like just kind of stand up pieces, you know, like things that, you know, you see that are just like eye catchers because they're so massive. So my professor was like, oh, you're very ambitious. He goes, you should take ceramics. And I'm like, nah, I'm okay. My advisor next semester, she goes, I'm going to put you in ceramics. And I'm like, no, let's try something else. So finally she pulls me aside. She goes, look, she goes, you have maxed out on your credits everywhere else. She's like, I'm putting you in ceramics. She's like, it's a great class. You're going to love it. So I get in, and on day one, it's ceramics one. So my first time ever taking like a pottery class. And my professor, his name's Derek Walters at IUN. And he goes, day one, he hands us all a lump of clay. And he's like, go ahead and, you know, sculpt yourself a little head, like a clay head. And I'm like, all right. So I'm sitting there just playing with the clay, whatever. And we're all just sitting there talking. And I look around and I'm like, this doesn't really feel like I'm like doing anything. You know what I mean? I was like, this is like the same thing if I were at home with my kids doing Play-Doh. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't grasping it, you know? And at the end of the class, he takes our clay heads and he smashes them into the wedging table. And I'm like, what was the point of all that? I didn't get it. You know, I'm like, what are we doing here? So first full week of class goes by and I'm like, you know what, man, like maybe this isn't it for me. Like, I'm not getting it. You know, like I'm just not gravitating to whatever people are doing or what they're liking about ceramics class. I literally packed up all my equipment. I had my bag full of all my pottery tools and everything. And I was like, I'm probably just going to drop this class. And as I'm getting ready to walk away, I look over at the ceramics professor and he's setting up at the wheel. And I'm like, I've never seen this before, you know? So I walk over and I go, hey, Derek, is it okay if I sit here and watch, you know, see what you're doing? And he's like, yeah, sure, man, go for it. So he's setting up for a demo for ceramics 2 and 3 students. Now, Derek is, you know, 6 foot plus, you know, pretty tall guy. He's got like these big bear paw hands, you know what I mean? And he's got like this ring, like this donut ring, like real, almost as wide as the bat itself on the wheel. And as he's talking, he's doing, you know, all the necessary movements and stuff like that. And I watch him just take one hand, grabs this ring and turns it into this like large, like 12 inch cylinder. In one pull, and like my mind was blown, right? So I looked at him and I go, I'm gonna put my tools back in my locker. I was like, but that's what I want to do. He looked at me and he goes, again, he goes, that's ambitious. He goes, somebody who's never worked with clay wants to do the wheel, you know? And I'm like, yeah, no, that's what I want to do, you know? He goes, it's your semester. Give me 12 projects by the end of the semester. Not a problem. I worked on the wheel for 4 weeks without making anything because I was struggling so bad, never getting like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Never getting my, like my
centered.
I couldn't get it centered. I couldn't get anything to happen for me. And a couple of colleagues that were sitting with me, they're like, hey man, like, you know, try this, try that. I make my first bowl and I go and I take it over to Derek and I'm like, dude, check it out. I finally made one. First thing he does is he wires it in half.
Yep.
I'm like, oh my gosh. I go, what are you doing? I'm seeing red. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just seeing red and I'm mad. And he's sitting there telling me like, it's, you know, so he's talking about the walls, the thicknesses, all these things, all those words in one ear, out the other, not paying attention. All I'm thinking is like, dude, you're a jerk. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm angry.
You ruined my first piece ever. You know, like I was so proud of myself. He looks at me and he goes, law of detachment. He goes, you know, he's like, you made one, now you can make another. Now, reason why I bring that story up is because I was teaching classes here at my studio. And I had a group, they were mostly beginners, and they come in and, you know, I want to say maybe it was our first or second visit. And I bring the same topic up to them, you know, like, different scenario. Somebody messed up on the thing or whatever. And I was like, hey, you know what? Like, law of detachment, like, we know what went wrong. Let's just move on and learn from it. You know, we'll be okay. It's just clay. It'll rehydrate. It'll, we can wedge it up. You know, we can turn it into it. We can still turn it into something beautiful. And I'm telling that, and then I'm telling that to somebody. And all of a sudden it's like one of those aha moments, you know, where I'm like, that's what he meant. I know what he was trying to tell me. He taught me a lesson and I didn't absorb it until like years later. But that's how I got into pottery. It was literally watching him set up and do the wheel. And ever since then, like, I still consider myself a wheel thrower as far as ceramics goes. I really don't paint as much anymore, but when I'm on the wheel or doing anything clay, like, I'm just in constant experimental mode. And, you know, like, I just feel like that was just the groundbreaking, like, moment for me, you know. But I still teach that same law of detachment every time I'm working with beginners. Sometimes people have the same reaction that I gave them or that I gave him, you know. People will be like, what are you doing? Why are you cutting it in half? Or why are you so chill about it? You know, I'm like, you'll be fine. We're going to do again. We're going to do better next time, you know. But yeah, that's how I got into pottery, was in college. Even during my BFA session, you know, when we were doing our senior thesis, I had all my paintings had nothing to do with the practice that I'm in now, you know. But the ceramics part is something that I never wanted to stop doing, even after college and before the studio. You know, it was just me and a wheel in the garage with, you know, taking up half the space in there with shelving and just clay projects everywhere, buckets filled with scraps.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. It's a very important moment because you think you're doing something on the wheel, but unless you cut it in half, you have no idea the thickness that might be at the bottom of that project. So it's really, you really only need to do it once. I mean, it makes an impression that first time, you know, so
yeah,
it's a good technique.
Yeah. And, you know, from the very first time, I did not understand any of that.
No, you were just so happy to lift something up, probably.
Oh, yeah. Like a little kid, like, Dad, look what I did.
So what brought you to, how long did it take for you to establish Duneland Pottery? I mean, what's the storyline from finishing your BFA to getting there?
So, after I graduated and completed my BFA, I started teaching art classes at a charter school in Gary. And it was like 9th through 12th grade students. And I was teaching mostly two-dimensional art. You know, every now and then when funding was available, we would implement some clay work. But like I said, I was continuing my practice at home. And what I think kind of was like a turn, like another pivotal point for me was a friend of mine owns a cafe in Crown Point, and she said she wanted to offer table spaces for people to come and sell artwork or, you know, sell whatever crafts or hobbies that they do on the side. She said, you know, she goes, I'm not trying to make money off you guys. I'm just trying to make some, you know, offer something in addition to my customers. And she's like, I seen that you had posted some things you made. She's like, so would you like to come in and sell them? And I was like, I never thought of it. You know, I literally never thought I would be selling pottery. All the pottery that I was making, you know, when I had too much of it, I just started wrapping them up as Christmas and birthday presents, you know?
Right.
And I took in maybe 3 or 4 boxes of pottery. I had no, like, showmanship. So I literally just set them all out in a row on a table. Like I didn't know what I was doing. And as soon as she opened her doors and people came in, like people, like they gravitated towards the work right away. And people were talking about, oh, I love the forms. You know, I love that I could see the finger lines in your pulling, or I can, you know, I love how this cup or mug feels in my hands. And like all these things that I was listening to people tell me, I was like, wow, you know, like I didn't think that like I could create like artwork that so many people would appreciate, you know, especially coming from like a painting background where, you know, like I had curated some shows during my time in college, and I was like, you know, you get people that come in, but nobody that just like, oh, you know, I need to have these pieces in my home, you know? So I was like, this is like different for me. And it was kind of, it was a really nice introduction to selling my pottery. You know, I like I said, I showed up with like three or four boxes of pottery, and my friend Bree, who owns Cafe Fresco, it was her shop in Crown Point. She looked at me and she see me only packing up one box, and she goes, well, you must have did pretty good. And I was like, yeah, it's like people bought most of it. You know, I was like, I bet you if we had another hour and a half, 2 hours, I'd be walking away with nothing. And I think she had said something along the lines like, yeah, you know, you should think about like developing a brand, you know, and seeing if you can sell some stuff, you know. And to me, it was just going to be like a side thing, like a side project. So I talked to her and I go, this is great. I was like, so I'm going to think of a way that I can start selling more pottery. Originally, I think I came up with a few silly names that I don't know. They were all kind of goofy, but I was just like trying to come up with silly names for the pottery business. And I didn't like necessarily like have like an official LLC or anything like that. I was just showing up at like pop-up events and selling like boxes of pottery that were made in my garage or at the IUN studios and stuff like that. And it wasn't until right before COVID, I was like, I'm going to find a way to make this like a real thing. And right before COVID, in my mind, it was going to be, this was my retirement, you know, this is going to be my retirement plan. And, you know, as far as Chesterton goes, like I wasn't living in Chesterton yet, but I always loved coming out to Chesterton. I loved the art community. I love the inclusiveness out here. I love that it's not, you know, like a town based on, you know, like bars on every corner type of thing. You know, I really love that there's a sense of culture, respect for nature, you know, appreciation for the dunes and things like that. And I was like, this is kind of the community I want to get some groundwork in. So I started at the art center, approaching them with a membership, and they let me sell some pottery in their gift shop. And eventually it led to finding more equipment and a space in the downtown area. I never really saw it as like a business plan at first until shortly after 2021, I started looking into actually having a brick and mortar studio space.
And it is primarily like a, I mean, you do have an occasional class, but it's mostly open studio, right? Is that what I seem to have read?
Yes. So the Doonland Pottery itself is supported by independent potters. So open studio time is, you know, time and space that is rented out by, you know, potters that already have their practice or their experience. You know, we do have a good sense of community between all of us. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it reminds me of like an art class where, you know, we were in college and you're like, you know, I'm really thinking about doing this shape. And then it's just like, oh, hey, well, why don't you try this? Or why don't you do that? You know, so we do have like a really good community here. I like to sprinkle in the workshops, you know, because I feel like they're good icebreakers for, you know, people that have never tried pottery, but they've always had it on a bucket list. And the workshops tend to lead into a little bit more, you know, where some people will visit the studio once and then they're like, I really love it and I want to keep doing it, you know. So then I take them in as like one-on-one students.
Is there a fee for doing that, like when they come in to use their facilities?
So the pricing kind of breaks down as the independent potters package. So for people that want to come in and take personal lessons, I just charge them the same as I do the 12 hours for an independent potter. And then the only difference is that we are very structured on scheduling those 12 hours. So then that way, like, it's not cutting into, like, my production time. You know, because I do make stuff for market events. I got a few vendor contracts that I got in the works. So I do have some bulk items that I'm trying to create to get into some local shops. But yeah, so anybody that wants to do what am I looking for? Like one-on-one lessons with me, like I said, I'll bill them the same way I do the independent potters, only it's more structured as far as like the time. And it includes the use of all the facility here. So, like, includes the clay, all the tools, resources, glazes, and firing schedule.
Wow.
How many kilns do you have?
Two. I have two oxidation kilns, building a raku kiln right now. And the next is going to be a reduction kiln, which I'm hopeful can happen within a year.
Time-wise, what days are generally you're available or there for that? I'm sure you don't want to do 7 days a week, but you know, what times and days are you open?
So for the independent potters that have experience and they don't need any guidance, the studio is open from 11 to 7, Monday through Saturday. For people that are beginners or they're working with me one-on-one, those hours are from 1 to 6, Monday through Thursday. And those are all done based on an availability for both of us. So for example, Larry, if you wanted to come in and you wanted to learn how to throw on the wheel, you know, we would talk about what your availability and my availability is. And then we would just stick to that plan for 3 or 4 week sessions.
So what is the hourly fee then? How does it break down?
So it's 12 hours for $210.
So you're located, we'll talk a little bit about that in your website and everything, because we're down to about 2 minutes here. But do you do any exhibits or of your work? I mean, do you go out and do any art fair stuff, or is this just ties you down mostly if you have that kind of schedule?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't sleep. I do go out and exhibit a lot. So my artwork, I do have some pottery that's at the Chesterton Art Center and at Lou Besnick. So I have work in their gift shops. I'll be at the Chesterton Art Fair in August, the Lou Besnick Art Fair in August as well. Coming up July 19th, I'll be at the Artisan Fair in St. Joe's, Michigan. It's Artisans on the Bluff. That's July 19th. And then almost every other Saturday, either myself or my daughter will attend the Chesterton European Market, and we vend some of our handmade mugs there.
Excellent. So tell us how people can find you in Chesterton, your website, information like that.
So any questions or concerns, I say tell people just go ahead and email me at doonlinpottery@gmail. But the website is www.doonlinpottery.com, all one word. And then what I do is when I do have some new workshops or new events that are being posted, or even just letting people know where I'm going to be vending at for an artisan show, I post everything on the social media, which is @Doonland_pottery for Instagram and Facebook.
Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air and sharing your entire art and pottery journey at the Doonland Pottery. That's David Ariola and the Doonland Pottery. Again, it's doonlandpottery.com. And if you want to talk to him, doonlandpottery@gmail.com. David, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your art journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you. Best of luck.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com. patreon.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart.